Such calculations suffer from being only indirect evaluations, and since the velocity at which the glacial mud had been deposited in the lakes was not constant and the amount varied, the mud must have assembled on the bottom of the lake at a faster rate in the beginning when the glaciers were larger, and if the ice age terminated suddenly, the deposition of detritus would have been much heavier at first, and there would be little analogy to the accumulation of detritus from the seasonal melting of snow in the Alps. Therefore, the time that has elapsed since the end of the last glacial period must have been even shorter than reckoned. Geologists regard the Great Lakes of America as having been formed at the end of the Ice Age when the continental glacier retreated and the depressions freed from the glacier became lakes. In the last 200 years, Niagara Falls has retreated from Lake Ontario toward Lake Erie at the rate of 5 feet annually, washing alone the rocks of the bed of the falls. 2. If this process has been going on at the same rate since the end of the last glacial period, about 7,000 years were needed to move Niagara Falls from the mouth of the gorge at Queenston to its present position. The assumption that the quantity of water moving through the gorge has been uniform since the end of the Ice Age is the basis of this calculation, and therefore, it was concluded, 7,000 years may constitute the maximum length of time since the birth of the falls. In the beginning, when immense masses of water were released by the retreat of the continental glacier, the rate of movement of Niagara Falls must have been much more rapid. The time estimate may need significant reduction, and is sometimes lower to 5,000 years. The erosion and sedimentation on the shores and the bottom of Lake Michigan also suggest a lapse of time counted in thousands, but not in tens of thousands, of years. Also, the result of paleontological research in America carries evidence which constitutes a guarantee that before the last period of glaciation, modern man, in the form of that highly developed race, the American Indian, was living on the eastern seaboard of North America. A. Keith. It is assumed that with the advent of the last glacial period the Indians retreated southward, returning to the north when the ice uncovered the ground and when the Great Lakes emerged, the basin of the St. Lawrence was formed, and Niagara Falls began its retreat toward Lake Erie. If the end of the last glacial period occurred only a few thousand years ago, in historical times or at a time when the art of writing may have been already employed in the centers of ancient civilization, the records written in rocks by nature and the records written by man must give a coordinated picture. Let us, therefore, investigate the traditions and the literary records of ancient man, and compare them with the records of nature. The World Ages. A conception of ages that were brought to their end by violent changes in nature is common all over the world. The number of ages differs from people to people and from tradition to tradition. The difference depends on the number of catastrophes that a particular people retained in its memory, or on the way it reckoned the end of an age. In the annals of ancient Etruria, according to Varro, were records of 7 elapsed ages. Censorinus, an author of the 3rd Christian century and compiler of Varro, wrote that men thought that different prodigies appeared by means of which the gods notified mortals at the end of each age. The Etruscans were versed in the science of the stars, and after having observed the prodigies with attention, they recorded these observations in their books. The Greeks had similar traditions. There is a period, wrote Censorinus, called the supreme year by Aristotle, at the end of which the sun, moon, and all the planets return to their original position. This supreme year has a great winter, called by the Greeks Cataclysmos, which means deluge, and a great summer, called by the Greeks Ekpyrosis, or combustion of the world. The world, actually, seems to be inundated and burned alternately in each of these epochs. Anaximenes and Anaximander in the 6th pre-Christian century, and Diogenes of Apollonia in the 5th century, assumed the destruction of the world with subsequent recreation. Heraclitus, 540-475, taught that the world is destroyed in conflagration after every period of 10,800 years. Aristarchus of Samos in the 3rd century before the present era taught that in a period of 2,484 years the earth undergoes two destructions, of combustion and deluge. The Stoics generally believed in periodic conflagrations by which the world was consumed, to be shaped new. This is due to the forces of ever-active fire which exists in things and in the course of long cycles of time resolves everything into itself and out of it is constructed a reborn world. So Philo presented the notion of the Stoics that our world is refashioned in periodic conflagrations. In one such catastrophe the world will meet its ultimate destruction, colliding with another world, it will fall apart into atoms out of which, in a long process, a new earth will be created somewhere in the universe. Democritus and Epicurus, explained Philo, postulate many worlds, the origin of which they ascribe to the mutual impacts and interlacing of atoms, and their destruction to the counterblows and collisions by the bodies so formed. As this earth goes to its ultimate destruction, it passes through recurring cosmic catastrophes and is reformed with all that lives on it. Hesiod, one of the earliest Greek authors, wrote about four ages and four generations of men that were destroyed by the wrath of the planetary gods. The third age was the Age of Bronze, when it was destroyed by Zeus, a new generation repeopled the earth, and using bronze for arms and tools, they began to use iron, too. The heroes of the Trojan War were of this fourth generation. Then a new destruction was decreed, and after that came yet another generation, the fifth, of men who are upon the bounteous earth, the generation of iron. 3. In another work of his, Hesiod described the end of one of the ages. The life-giving earth crashed around in burning. All the land seethed, and the ocean's streams. It seemed even as if earth and wide heaven above came together, for such a mighty crash would have arisen if earth were being hurled to ruin, and heaven from on high were hurling her down. Analogous traditions of four expired ages persist on the shores of the Bengal Sea and in the highland of Tibet. The present age is the fifth. The sacred Hindu book Bhagavata Purana tells of four ages and of pralayas or cataclysms in which, in various epochs, mankind was nearly destroyed. The fifth age is that of the present. The world ages are called kalpas or yugas. Each world age met its destruction in catastrophes of conflagration, flood, and hurricane. Yajurvedam and Bhagavadam, sacred Hindu books, keeping to the scheme of four expired ages, differ only in the number of years ascribed to each. In the chapter, World Cycles, in Visuddhimagga, it is said that there are three destructions, the destruction by water, the destruction by fire, the destruction by wind, but that there are seven ages, each of which is separated from the previous one by a world catastrophe. Reference to ages and catastrophes is found in Avesta, Zendavesta, the sacred scriptures of Mazdaism, the ancient religion of the Persians. 8. Barmanyast, one of the books of Avesta, counts seven world ages or millennia. Zarathustra, Zoroaster, the prophet of Mazdaism, speaks of the signs, wonders, and perplexity which are manifested in the world at the end of each millennium. The Chinese call the perished ages Qis and number 10 Qis from the beginning of the world until Confucius. In the ancient Chinese encyclopedia, Sing Li Da Siyun Chu, the general convulsions of nature are discussed. Because of the periodicity of these convulsions, the span of time between two catastrophes is regarded as a great year. As during a year, so during a world age, the cosmic mechanism winds itself up and in general convulsion of nature, the sea is carried out of its bed, mountains spring out of the ground, rivers change their course, human beings and everything are ruined, and the ancient traces effaced. An old tradition, and a very persistent one, of world ages that went down in cosmic catastrophes was found in the Americas among the Incas, the Aztecs, and the Mayas. 14. A major part of stone inscriptions found in Yucatan refer to world catastrophes. The most ancient of these fragments, Catans or calendar stones of Yucatan, refer, in general, to great catastrophes which, at intervals and repeatedly, convulsed the American continent, and of which all nations of this continent have preserved a more or less distinct memory. Codices of Mexico and Indian authors who compose the annals of their past give a prominent place to the tradition of world catastrophes that decimated humankind and changed the face of the earth. In the chronicles of the Mexican kingdom it is said, The ancients knew that before the present sky and earth were formed, man was already created and life had manifested itself four times. A tradition of successive creations and catastrophes is found in the Pacific, on Hawaii and on the islands of Polynesia. There were nine ages and in each age a different sky was above the earth. Icelanders, too, believed that nine worlds went down in a succession of ages, a tradition that is contained in the Edda. The rabbinical conception of ages crystallized in the post-exilic period. Already before the birth of our earth, worlds had been shaped and brought into existence, only to be destroyed in time. He made several worlds before ours, but he destroyed them all. This earth, too, was not created at the beginning to satisfy the divine plan. It underwent reshaping, six consecutive remoldings. New conditions were created after each of the catastrophes. On the fourth earth lived the generation of the Tower of Babel. We belong to the seventh age. Each of the ages or earths has a name. Seven heavens were created and seven earths were created, the most removed, the seventh, Eretz, the sixth, Adamah, the fifth, Arka, the fourth, Haraba, the third, Yabasha, the second, Tevel, and our own land called Held, and like the others, it is separated from the foregoing by abyss, chaos, and water. Great catastrophes changed the face of the earth. Some perished by deluge, others were consumed by conflagration, wrote the Jewish philosopher Philodot. According to the rabbinical authority Rashi, ancient tradition knows of periodic collapses of the firmament, one of which occurred in the days of the deluge, and which repeated themselves at intervals of 1,656 years. The duration of the world ages varies in Armenian and Arabian traditions. The sun ages. An oft-repeated occurrence in the traditions of the world ages is the advent of a new sun in the sky at the beginning of every age. The word sun is substituted for the word age in the cosmogonical traditions of many peoples all over the world. The Mayas counted their ages by the names of their consecutive suns. These were called water sun, earthquake sun, hurricane sun, fire Sunday. These suns mark the epochs to which are attributed the various catastrophes the world had suffered. Ixtlilxochitl, circa 1568 to 1648, the native Indian scholar, in his Annals of the Kings of Texcoco, described the world ages by the names of suns. The water sun, or sun of waters, was the first age, terminated by a deluge in which almost all creatures perished. The earthquake sun or age perished in a terrific earthquake when the earth broke in many places and mountains fell. The world age of the hurricane sun came to its destruction in a cosmic hurricane. The fire sun was the world age that went down in a rain of fire. The nations of Colua or Mexico, Humboldt quoted G6 Mara, the Spanish writer of the 16th century, believe according to their hieroglyphic paintings, that, previous to the sun which now enlightens them, four had already been successively extinguished. These four suns are as many ages, in which our species has been annihilated by inundations, by earthquakes, by a general conflagration, and by the effect of destroying tempests. Every one of the four elements participated in each of the catastrophes. Deluge, hurricane, earthquake, and fire gave their names to the catastrophes because of the predominance of one of them in the upheavals. Symbols of the successive suns are painted on the pre-Columbian literary documents of Mexico. Cinco Sols que son edades, or five suns that are epochs, wrote G6 Mara in his description of the conquest of Mexico. An analogy to this sentence of Gomara may be found in Lucius Amplius, a Roman author, who, in his book Liber Memorialis, wrote, "There were five suns." It is the same belief that Gomara found in the New World. The Mexican Annals of Cuautitlan, written in Nahua Indian, circa 1570, and based on ancient sources, contains the tradition of seven sun epochs. Chicontunasha, or the seven suns, is the designation for the world cycles or acts in the cosmic drama. The Buddhist sacred book of Visuddhimagga contains a chapter on world cycles. There are three destructions: the destruction by water, the destruction by fire, the destruction by wind. After the catastrophe of the deluge, when now a long period has elapsed from the cessation of the rains, a second sun appeared. In the interim, the world was enveloped in gloom. When this second sun appears, there is no distinction of day and night, but an incessant heat beats upon the world. When the fifth sun appeared, the ocean gradually dried up. When the sixth sun appeared, the whole world became filled with smoke. After the lapse of another long period, a seventh sun appears, and the whole world breaks into flames. This Buddhist book refers also to a more ancient discourse on the seven suns. The Brahmins called the epochs between two destructions the great days. The Sibben books recite the ages in which the world underwent destruction and regeneration. The Sibyl told as follows: the nine suns are nine ages. Now is the seventh sun. The Sibyl prophesied to ages yet to come, that of the eighth and of the ninth sun. The Aborigines of British North Borneo, even today, declare that the sky was originally low, and that six suns perished, and at present the world is illuminated by the seventh sun. Seven solar ages are referred to in Mayan manuscripts, in Buddhist sacred books, in the books of the Sibyl. In all quoted sources, the suns are explained, by the sources themselves, as signifying consecutive epochs, each of which went down in a great, general destruction. Did the reason for the substitution of the word sun for epoch by the peoples of both hemispheres lie in the changed appearance of the luminary and in its changed path across the sky in each world age? Part 1, Venus. No book, or collection of books, in the history of mankind has had a more attentive reading, a wider circulation, or more diligent investigation than the Old Testament. Chapter 1, The Most Incredible Story. The most incredible story of miracles is told about Joshua ben Nun, who, when pursuing the Canaanite kings at Beth Horon, implored the sun and the moon to stand still. And he said in the sight of Israel, "Sun, stand thou still upon Gibeon, and thou, moon, in the valley of Ajalon." And the sun stood still, and the moon stayed, until the people had avenged themselves upon their enemies. Is not this written in the book of Jasher? So the sun stood still in the midst of heaven, and hasted not to go down about a whole day, Joshua 10:12-13. This story is beyond the belief of even the most imaginative or the most pious person. Waves of stormy sea may have drowned one host and been merciful to another. The earth could crack asunder and swallow up human beings. The Jordan could be blocked by a slice of its bank falling into the bed of the river. Jericho's walls, not by the blast of trumpets, but by an incidental earthquake, could have been breached. But that the sun and the moon should halt in their movement across the firmament, this could be only the product of fancy, a poetic image, a metaphor, a hideous implausibility when imposed as a subject for belief, a matter for scorn. It manifests even a want of reverence for the Supreme Being. According to the knowledge of our age, not of the age when the book of Joshua or of Jasher was written, this could have happened if the earth had ceased for a time to roll along its prescribed path. Is such a disturbance conceivable? No record of the slightest confusion is registered in the present annals of the earth. Each year consists of 365 days, 5 hours, and 49 minutes. A departure of the earth from its regular rotation is thinkable, but only in the very improbable event that our planet should meet another heavenly body of sufficient mass to disrupt the eternal path of our world. It is true that aerolites or meteorites reach our earth continually, sometimes by the thousands and tens of thousands. But no dislocation of our precise turning round and round has ever been perceived. This does not mean that a larger body, or a larger number of bodies, could not strike the terrestrial sphere. The large number of asteroids between the orbits of the planets Mars and Jupiter suggests that at some unknown time another planet revolved there. Now only these meteorites follow approximately the path along which the destroyed planet circled the Sun. Possibly a comet ran into it and shattered it. That a comet may strike our planet is not very probable, but the idea is not absurd. The heavenly mechanism works with almost absolute precision, but unstable. Their way lost, comets by the thousands, by the millions, revolve in the sky, and their interference may disturb the harmony. Some of these comets belong to our system. Periodically they return, but not at the very exact intervals, owing to the perturbations caused by gravitation toward the larger planets when they fly too close to them. but innumerable other comets, often seen only through the telescope, come flying in from immeasurable spaces of the universe at very great speed, and disappear, possibly forever. Some comets are visible only for hours, some for days or weeks or even months. Concerning the wonder of the sun standing still, the scripture did not intend to teach men philosophy, or accommodate itself to the true and Pythagoric system of the world. And again, the prophets and holy penmen themselves, being seldom or never philosophers, were not capable of representing these things otherwise than they, with the vulgar, understood them. Might it happen that our earth, the earth under our feet, would roll toward perilous collision with a huge mass of meteorites, a trail of stones flying at enormous speed around and across our solar system? This probability was analyzed with fervor during the last century. From the time of Aristotle, who asserted that a meteorite, which fell at Hegespotami when a comet was glowing in the sky, had been lifted from the ground by the wind and carried in the air and dropped over that place, until the year 1803 when, on April 26, a shower of meteorites fell at Aigle in France and was investigated by Biot for the French Academy of Sciences, the scholarly world, and in the meantime there lived Copernicus, Galileo Galilei, Kepler, Newton, and Huygens, did not believe that such a thing as a stone falling from the sky was possible at all. And this despite many occasions when stones fell before the eyes of a crowd, as did the aerolite in the presence of Emperor Maximilian and his court in Ensisheim, Alsace, on November 7, 1492. Only shortly before 1803, the Academy of Sciences of Paris refused to believe that, on another occasion, stones had fallen from the sky. The fall of meteorites on July 24, 1790 in southwest France was pronounced un phénomène physique impossible. Since the year 1803, however, scholars have believed that stones fall from the sky. If a stone can collide with the earth, and occasionally a shower of stones, too, cannot a full-size comet fly into the face of the earth? It was calculated that such a possibility exists but that it is very unlikely to occur. If the head of a comet should pass very close to our path, so as to effect a distortion in the career of the earth, another phenomenon besides the disturbed movement of the planet would probably occur. A rain of meteorites would strike the earth and would increase to a torrent. Stones scorched by flying through the atmosphere would be hurled on home and head. In the book of Joshua, two verses before the passage about the sun that was suspended on high for a number of hours without moving to the occident, we find this passage: as they, the Canaanite kings, fled from before Israel, and were in the going down to Beth-oren, the Lord cast down great stones from heaven upon them unto Azekah, and they died, they were more which died with hailstones, stones of Barad, than they whom the children of Israel slew with the sword. The author of the book of Joshua was surely ignorant of any connection between the two phenomena. He could not be expected to have had any knowledge about the nature of aerolites, about the forces of attraction between celestial bodies, and the like. As these phenomena were recorded to have occurred together, it is improbable that the records were invented. The meteorites fell on the earth in a torrent. They must have fallen in very great numbers, for they struck down more warriors than the swords of the adversaries. To have killed persons by the hundreds or thousands in the field, a cataract of stones must have fallen. A torrent of great stones would mean that a train of meteorites or a comet had struck our planet. The quotation in the Bible from the book of Jasher is laconic and may give the impression that the phenomenon of the motionless sun and moon was local, seen only in Palestine between the valley of Ajalon and Gibeon. But the cosmic character of the prodigy is pictured in a thanksgiving prayer ascribed to Joshua: sun and moon stood still in heaven, and thou didst stand in thy wrath against our oppressors. All the princes of the earth stood up, the kings of the nations who gathered themselves together. Thou didst destroy them in thy fury, and thou didst ruin them in thy rage. Nations raged from fear of thee, kingdoms tottered because of thy wrath. Thou didst pour out thy fury upon them. Thou didst terrify them in thy wrath. The earth quaked and trembled from the noise of thy thunders. Thou didst pursue them in thy storm, thou didst consume them in the whirlwind. Their carcasses were like rubbish. The wide radius over which the heavenly wrath swept is emphasized in the prayer, all the kingdoms dotted. A torrent of large stones coming from the sky, an earthquake, a whirlwind, a disturbance in the movement of the earth. These four phenomena belong together. It appears that a large comet must have passed very near to our planet and disrupted its movement. A part of the stones dispersed in the neck and tail of the comet smote the surface of our earth a shattering blow. Are we entitled, on the basis of the Book of Joshua, to assume that at some date in the middle of the second millennium before the present era the earth was interrupted in its regular rotation by a comet? Such a statement had so many implications that it should not be made thoughtlessly. To this I say that though the implications are great and many, the present research in its entirety is an interlinked sequence of documents and other evidence, all of which in common carry the weight of this and other statements in this book. The problem before us is one of mechanics. Points on the outer layers of the rotating globe, especially near the equator, move at a higher linear velocity than points on the inner layers, but at the same angular velocity. Consequently, if the Earth were suddenly stopped, or slowed down, in its rotation, the inner layers might come to rest, or their rotational velocity might be slowed while the outer layers would still tend to go on rotating. This would cause friction between the various liquid or semi-fluid layers, creating heat. On the outermost periphery the solid layers would be torn apart, causing mountains and even continents to fall or rise. As I shall show later, mountains fell and others rose from level ground, the earth with its oceans and continents became heated, the sea boiled in many places, and rock liquefied, volcanoes ignited and forests burned. Would not a sudden stop by the earth, rotating at a little over 1,000 miles an hour at its equator, mean a complete destruction of the world? Since the world survived, there must have been a mechanism to cushion the slowing down of terrestrial rotation, if it really occurred, or another escape for the energy of motion besides transformation into heat, or both. Or if rotation persisted undisturbed, the terrestrial axis may have tilted in the presence of a strong magnetic field, so that the sun appeared to lose for hours its diurnal movement. These problems are kept in sight and are faced in the epilogue of this volume. On the other side of the ocean, the Book of Joshua, compiled from the more ancient Book of Jasher, relates the order of events. Joshua went up from Gilgal all night. In the early morning he fell upon his enemies unawares at Gibeon, and chased them along the way that goes up to Beth Horan. As they fled, great stones were cast from the sky. That same day, in the day when the Lord delivered up the Amorites, the sun stood still over Gibeon and the moon over the valley of Ajalon. It has been noted that this description of the position of the luminaries implies that the sun was in the forenoon position. The Book of Joshua says that the luminaries stood in the midst of the sky. Allowing for the difference in longitude, it must have been early morning or night in the Western Hemisphere. We go to the shelf where stand books with the historical traditions of the Aborigines of Central America. The sailors of Columbus and Cortes, arriving in America, found there literate peoples who had books of their own. Most of these books were burned in the 16th century by the Dominican monks. Very few of the ancient manuscripts survived, and these are preserved in the libraries of Paris, the Vatican, the Prado, and Dresden. They are called codices, and their texts have been studied and partly read. However, among the Indians of the days of the conquest and also of the following century there were literary men who had access to the knowledge written in pictographic script by their forefathers. In the Mexican annals of Cuautitlan, the history of the empire of Culiacan and Mexico, written in Nahua Indian in the 16th century, it is related that during a cosmic catastrophe that occurred in the remote past, the night did not end for a long time. The biblical narrative describes the sun as remaining in the sky for an additional day, about a whole day. The Midrashim, the books of ancient traditions not embodied in the scriptures, relate that the sun and the moon stood still for 36 itim, or 18 hours, and thus from sunrise to sunset the day lasted about 30 hours. In the Mexican annals it is stated that the world was deprived of light and the sun did not appear for a fourfold night. In a prolonged day or night time could not be measured by the usual means at the disposal of the ancients. Sahagun, the Spanish servant who came to America a generation after Columbus and gathered the traditions of the Aborigines, wrote that at the time of one cosmic catastrophe the sun rose only a little way over the horizon and remained therewith moving. The moon also stood still. I am dealing with the Western Hemisphere first, because the biblical stories were not known to its Aborigines when it was discovered. Also, the tradition preserved by Sahagun bears no trace of having been introduced by the missionaries. In his version there is nothing to suggest Joshua ben Nun and his war against the Canaanite kings, and the position of the sun, only a very little above the eastern horizon, differs from the biblical text, though it does not contradict it.